Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind?
Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty.
Are you there?
Yeah.
And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the night.
Yes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being with us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Tuesday. It is the 9th of August in the year 2005. Alan is with us again this evening. And we'll just, for our spiritual message, one we've done many times in the past, from Ephesians 6. We'll start with verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against wickedness in high places. And boy, that says a mouthful, doesn't it, Alan?
It does if you experience it, yes.
If you experience it. Okay, well, expand on that.
Most people know these sayings or from the Bible and so on, but and even the ones who go to the churches can parrot them off, but they don't really know. It's like anything else, you can't really know something until you experience it.
Well, okay, what are we talking about?
The wickedness in the high places, or attacks that come not just through humans, often they do, but you can often tell that there's something else within that human that's foreign to the human. You know, sometimes you're dealing with what you might call an entity. You know?
Oh, thank you. Well, okay, yes. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against print. And that wrestling is so often within us.
It's often within us, but I've often find it's generally from other people around me.
Yeah, well, you are different.
Yeah.
But I know for myself, in the years that I have lived and experienced, there has been a lot of wrestling going on within Alan.
Uh-huh.
And that's maybe why I... that means a lot to me in that way. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we all struggle to understand. There's a difference between struggling and experiencing the wickedness. There's a difference there.
You mean actually being a wicked person?
Yeah, or seeing something emerge through a person which you do know is supernatural, you might say.
Okay.
When you do experience it, you even though you don't want to believe it, but if you experience it firsthand, you're left that you can't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between understanding or hearing about something and actually knowing something. It's a big difference.
So you think I'm just parroting words there?
Oh, no.
Well, that's what
I'm talking about the people who go to churches and know all this stuff by heart. And they could probably read the whole thing from memory by heart, but in a sense it's words, it's only words, because everyone can imagine what it means, but what I'm saying is if you actually experience it firsthand, then you have no doubt that there are things happening around us outside of humans and sometimes within certain humans that are directed against us.
You're talking about entities that have been opened themselves up to outside forces. Is that what you
mean?
Yes,
the people who have opened themselves up to entities.
Yeah.
And apparently it's a very easy thing to do, and yet once you open that doorway, you're wide open for more to come through any time at all. You know?
Uh-huh.
And if you are on the right track and you are doing what you know you must do to wake people up, not for any selfish reason or from the fact that you want company in your journey, but basically because you know that something you must do is to wake people up, then you will get attacks coming through different people. And sometimes you're aware that this isn't the person at all. There's something in them that's far too smart, far too intelligent, because you'll know that person's general nature. And you definitely, once it happens, you can't deny it when you have first-hand experience of it. Yeah. And yet, being a rational person, you'd love to deny it.
Well, Alan.
Yeah.
I think I told you about this. It was a very close friend of mine when we were in high school, and I went to visit her. We hadn't seen each other for quite a while, and she had cancer. And anyway, I won't go further because I'm not going to identify. But when I was there, my sis lived in Flint, in Michigan, and a couple of other of our close friends came, so that we could just all chat together, because I didn't have all that much time. And she actually drove over there. She was recuperating and did recover. But anyway, we were sitting at the table talking, and they weren't sure yet that the surgery was going to be successful for her, by the way. That was why I made the trip to visit her. And anyway, we were talking, and I was across the table from her, and I happened to look over, and I saw... Actually, you see, at first, I thought that what I saw was a death mask, because the face was pure white like chalk, but it had this almost grimace on its face and real wide-looking open eyes, and it was looking, grinning at me, and it made me nauseous, and I looked away, and I thought, oh, my God, she's going to die. And then when I looked back, it was her. It was there. And later... there was a situation where she began getting mixed up with channeling and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She called me very late at night one night, and she told me what she was doing. I said, you have to be careful. You can open yourself up to other entities. And she said, oh, I'm protected. He's with me. And when she said that, it was like this evil was coming right through the phone. I wanted to pitch the phone. And then I just said, I'm going to go now. And I was very frightened of her, and saw her at a class reunion and didn't even want to, you know, pretend like I didn't even see her. And she came up finally. She said, you're frightened of me. And I said, yes. And she said, well, you had every right to be. And then she told me that she had. And she began getting a lot of counseling and was able to get rid of it. And she was carrying around some evil type entity.
Yeah, I lived with one of them, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I've seen it firsthand.
Uh-huh.
I've seen the personalities change from an old hag, this is all within 5 minutes, to another creature, to a young girl with a young girl's voice, each one telling me something different. And I've seen that the face change, as you say. It's common that all the lines disappear, they turn absolutely white, but the voice changed too, and it says, I've been trying to get rid of you, you know. So, I've experienced it, and I can't deny it.
That could sound like multiple entities.
No, there's no such thing as multiple. That was the latest psychiatric cover for something that's always been here.
I see.
Because when you're talking
multiple personalities, Alan.
Yeah, when you're dealing with these things, you cannot increase intellect with multiple personalities.
Yeah, that's not what I was... I said, I think, multiple entities.
Oh, yeah, and that's quite common, too.
That's
very common, and if you get rid of the lower one, you'll hear the voice of the higher one coming through, the one with more authority, smarter than the last one, and eventually you might get the it's like a chain of command, almost, like an officer down to the private, the army.
Yes, and what I would like to do, because this is a bit of it can be frightening to people, And I want to emphasize that the evil that is unseen, there is also good, and there are forces, benevolent, loving forces, I believe, that protect us. And I'm going to share a situation I had, and I'm not going to go into detail, but it was a woman that I had met, and we started getting very friendly. And then I found out that she was involved in witchcraft, and this was one weekend when Chuck was not here, and there was a chicken, laying down in the path on the way to the pond. And it was old. I thought, no, it can't be one of our girls because this is like it looked like it had been burned or decayed or something. And but there was one red feather, and so I went and counted the hens, and sure enough, one of our hens was missing. And you and I talked about that, and because I knew that it was some kind of some hex or something that was they were trying to put on me. Remember that, Alan?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll tell you what we did. The children, I didn't talk to the children about this. They were visiting, of course, but I didn't want to frighten them, and I was frightened. But what we started doing, we always, when we said our prayers at night, said Our Father, and then the prayer of protection. And then and when we had a meal, we just always said a blessing, holding hands. Well, I started doing the prayer for protection right after the thank you prayer for our food. The blessing, and they never questioned me. They just did it, and they didn't say, why are we doing this now? And we did it every time we ate, and we did it at bedtime. And anyway, long story short, it was very, you know how it is said that curses come home to roost?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my understanding is that that is a lower form of of energy, a vibration or frequency, and when yours is high, it can't penetrate. It's that light or that high frequency acts as a literal barrier. And so what happens is that somebody tries to hex you or curse you or put a, what do you call it, on you, it can come right back to them. And it wasn't, but if you, let's say, within a week after that, there was a birthday party going on, and the woman who had introduced us originally told me that the party didn't last very long because she mangled her fingers in a blender. I said, oh, curses do come home to roost, I guess. So I just wanted our listeners to know that this is not to be frightened of, but to be aware of. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't asking you to comment, but I'm done.
No, I'm just going to say that it doesn't always work out that way either, though, because there are lots of people who have been in the situation where their husband, wife, or partner has gone the same way. And if you're in the same house together, now you're in trouble, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been through the whole thing with someone trying to kill you in a car two or three times. Run into brick walls and things,
well,
and you have to grab you're driving and you have to grab the handbrake.
Point,
I've been through this whole thing.
Point made, you're still here, you're talking to us tonight, Alan.
I still am, yeah, but what I'm saying is nasty things can certainly happen to people regardless. And again, many people will deny what's really happening because it's outside of what they think is their rationale. They'll think, well, maybe there's something wrong psychiatrically or whatever. But when you get to the direct connection where something speaks through them with an intellect or an accent or a different voice, but the intellect certainly and the knowledge that this person generally doesn't have, you know you're in the presence of something beyond the norm.
Yep.
And then you have no choice but to accept it for what it is. And you must deal with it from then on accordingly. There's no point to trying to go to doctors or anything to deal with that kind of situation.
Right.
But as I say, those who are always on the right path and who are trying to get the messages out of what's happening here and on planet Earth will definitely come under attack. There's no way about it. If you're doing the right thing, you will be attacked one way or another. Because this is the Lord of the world who runs the system here.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm sorry. I'm not saying this to be to debate or anything. But when you said that, mm-hmm. the thought that entered my mind is that there is no power, not anywhere in any dimension, greater than the power of our Creator. And so, therefore, the Lord of this world, maybe it comes down to this, he only lords it, only lords over people who willingly succumb. In other words, the system. You know.
I can't really agree with that.
That's okay.
I'll tell you why. All those Iraqis who are having their weddings and so on and being bombed from the air by mistake, I'm sure were no nastier or wrong or lived differently from the people here. And they had no idea it was going to come and hit them.
Maybe it wasn't a mistake either.
And nothing came out to help those people, you know. So it doesn't quite work that way. It's a nice belief to think that somehow you'll always walk through hell and back.
No, that is not what I said. I shared some of my experiences, and I do know. This is my belief, and I know we all have them, but that we're here until we're. Whatever our mission is finished. I mean, I've had experiences, at least five in my life, where by physical laws, I should not even be here. And each time, it didn't happen. And there was this feeling, this thought in me, I know that I'm here for a reason, but what is it? And I just kept asking and asking. So therefore, if the day comes, when we're no longer here in this physical realm, for me, in my mind, it is because our time here was over. I'm not trying to debate, but that's where I am with it. A lot of people have asked me if I'm afraid, because of what, I do. And I said, no, I'm not afraid. Well, you're brave, you're courageous. No, I think courage is doing something in the face of fear. And so I don't say that it's courage. It's just this tremendous desire, in almost an inner movement that has me want to share with our listeners as I find and discover truth. And there is no fear. But I do know, I have a feeling that if I ever looked outside and saw myself surrounded with a bunch of jack-booted, flak-jacketed thugs, I'd probably wet my pants, Alan. You know, I'm not saying I don't have fear, but what I'm saying is that I don't live here in fear. And if the time comes when my time is over, I don't know what the way will be out of here, but then it's over. So, I'm not saying that what's happening is not the darkest of evil. Beyond our actual ability to conceive of that depth of evil. I'm not saying that, but I do know also that there is love and there is light and there is. I think it's important to keep that in mind, to keep the fear from the door. You know what I'm saying?
Well, fear is one thing, but generally you're not afraid of things you understand. As I say, we understand that there are jack-booted thugs. It doesn't have the same effect as something that you don't understand.
Right.
Yeah. So sure, there's nothing to... And the fact is, everyone that's listening here, except for a few people who follow different paths, know that they're going to die one day, physically. And generally most people are so terrified of death that they go into all sorts of weird things to try and save themselves, basically.
You mean succumbing to the system and not making waves and...
The system, or they run off into esoteric groups and spend lots of money and so on to try and live forever in the physical body. And, you know, I've met many people like that.
Oh, I've never met anybody that actually
even
considered...
Oh, yeah. And in fact, in Hollywood, you're going to find thousands of them trying to do that very thing. And they'll spend thousands and thousands of dollars running from gurus all over the world and to them and trying everything because they're terrified of death, you see.
Uh-huh.
They can't imagine anything outside of this...
Of this physical realm.
That's right.
Yes, uh-huh.
And, of course, the more wealthy they are and the more... and the less hurt they are by the system, then they think this life is just wonderful, and for them, in a sense, it generally is.
You know what?
They don't have the worries that most people have.
Yeah, I know, but...
Day-to-day worries.
I know, but
so,
you know...
So naturally, this is their heaven, you see.
Yeah, but you know what, Alan?
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it behind the scenes,
uh-huh.
even though they live in the sumptuous lifestyles, I know people who are wealthy, and that's all they have is their wealth.
I know.
And so, therefore, their lives aren't really complete.
No, I didn't say they were complete.
No,
I'm saying they're running to try and save themselves. And often they can't even tell you or explain to themselves what they're running to or from.
Huh.
But it really is, it's a frantic search for immortality in this world,
huh.
in this present physical system.
Well, they need to go out and find a willing vampire then.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
bite
well, I'm
on
sure
the neck.
That's been tried, you know. And I'm sure that's been well tried. In fact, it was well tried in the 1800s.
Actually?
Yes, uh-huh.
Wow.
I've got photographs from the late 1800s where they took groups of wealthy people in London who had tuberculosis. This is from the upper middle classes and the higher aristocracies. And they took them into slaughterhouses and they got the first drink of the fresh blood from killed cattle. And I have the photographs here. Yeah. So that was quite common back then.
Wow. You know what it made me think about?
Uh-huh.
The blood sacrifices in the Old Testament.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember you telling us about this. There was a poem that a woman had written. But when I found in the Old Testament where Jehovah said that I have, it isn't putrefied, but I have something to their gifts, their offerings, and have caused them to pass their firstborn through the fire.
Yeah.
And then there is another one where he says that all that open is the matrix of the children of Israel, he said, the herds and the children of Israel, they are mine. And I talked to Steve Jacobson about that,
mm-hmm.
and I said, God, Steve, they were actually burning babies to Jehovah. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, it's called cannibalism, Jackie.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean they were eating? He said, well, what do you think those priests did with those babies?
Yeah.
They roasted the lamb, they roasted the children, they roasted, and then we were talking about this, and in fact you told our listeners about this, about a woman who had written a book, who had made a trip over there quite a while ago, and was in the lower part of the temple, and described, or first of all, the sacrificial block. Remember that, Alan?
Mm-hmm.
And described, you know, how it had the grooves that and the hole in the middle, and then all of the blood ran down. And I said, I wonder where that blood goes.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, down below. Mm-hmm. And there was a poem that had been written about that exact thing. Do you recall that?
Mm. Yeah, I do. But this one had, that religion really was simply adopted from the Phoenicians. Because the Phoenicians were the first ones that we have in recorded history who did that. And modern archaeology is still unearthing caverns under the ground where they did bury the charred remains of these babies, thousands of them. Yeah. So So it was simply adopted into this new religion called Judaism. And so much of the Old Testament is actually borrowed history from other cultures. But it was pretty widespread, and of course it was quite common too for the Athenians and the Greeks to put their firstborn or not any unwanted child on the hilltop. That's what they said, giving back to nature. They would just leave it there for the wolves or the animals to eat. So this was quite common in ancient times.
So the drinking of blood to these creatures, actually they believe they're taking in the life force of that slaughtered victim, whether it's an animal or a human.
Yes. And of course some sects still do that today. With very high Masonic sects, above the charitable nonsense at the bottom, and the OTO, Aleister Crowley was thought to
What's
have done
the
OTO? He killed his own firstborn child, and did that very ritual to enhance and his own sexual prowess, basically, and to give him longevity, and so he it's thought that he sacrificed his own firstborn son.
He did actually did.
Yeah.
And what is the OTO?
The Order Templi Orientis.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was who, Alan?
Aleister Crowley. He was. Aleister Crowley was the founder of the OTO. He was a high-ranking member of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the York Rite of Freemasonry, the Grand Orient of France. He was high. He'd done all degrees in every one of the lodges. And he was given permission to start up a new sect, a higher sect, which now is used primarily for actors and actresses and musicians. They all joined the OTO. He also spawned two other side sects. One of them was Scientology. Aleister Crowley gave the charter to start Scientology to Hubbard. Hubbard was Crowley's cousin. And another sect...
L. Ron Hubbard was Aleister Crowley's cousin?
Yes,
Wow, okay, go ahead, continue.
So they're all interconnected, and then they founded another sect from Aleister Crowley's group, part of which was called the Now Movement. That was related to Rosicrucianism. And each time they chartered a sect, they had to be chartered from the high lodges, the high Masonic lodges. And just like the monks in ancient times, well, right up to fairly recently, could have a sect of monks, and they had to charter another group. So they spawned different sects, but they had to charter them, official charters for them to operate. So all of these were all interconnected in a pyramid fashion, and that's how the whole system works, of course. But I've been in homes where, like Jimmy Page's house, where...
I don't know who Jimmy Page is.
He was the guitarist for Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
And he bought Aleister Crowley's old house, and in this party they had... the walls and the floor and the ceiling were all exactly the same as Crowley left it. They had pentangles and all these Kabbalistic signs everywhere. And they flew in... airloads of females from all over Europe, young females, for this orgy they were having. And I saw three guys who looked like Jesuit priests or Mormon priests, because they all looked the same, come in during this whole thing, and they were treated with tremendous respect. So I realized there was a higher group running the show that all the boys knew, and all the boys knew who they were, you know.
Wow.
So this goes on, absolutely, you know.
We are going to take our break here at the half-hour mark.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get back, ladies and gentlemen, please get your pen in hand. You can have my address if you would like to help to support this broadcast. It's $140 an hour. And it that bill really escalates in a hurry. And so if you would like to see this broadcast continue, you're invited to become part of it, and you'll get my address right now. And then after that, we'll give you Alan's address. So stay with us, with Alan Watts. I'll be right back, Alan.
Yeah.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, we're back. Alan Watt is with us. And as those of you know who listen regularly to the broadcast or from time to time, Alan has actually finished his third book and has been sending them out, mailing them out to those of you who ordered them. There are three of them. And, Alan, would you let our listeners know a little bit about them and how they can get them?
Yes. Mainly they deal with from ancient history and the mystery religions, as it's the term to call the same system that runs the whole show. So I go through the history of the ancient Masonic groups, you might call them, up to the present time and how they run the entire world. In a degreed system going right up into a noble system or aristocratic system up into the very elite which are all interbred at the top, and how they control everything from police chiefs in your local area to firemen, to everybody who gets promoted and who gets on in the world, as they say. And I give a fairly detailed history using old documents photocopied into these books. And they're $25 each, payable in international postal order from your post office, or FRNs, wrapped in foil. They'll get to me as well. And if you want one or more, send the money to Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T, Site 41, that's S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Esther, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, like Fred Astaire, only with an E in the beginning, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1, and my phone number is 705-695-0416, and I'll be happy to talk to anyone with pertinent questions. I don't want to hear religious spiels given to me because I won't listen to them. But if you have definite questions that I can help you with the answers, I'll be glad to talk to you. I should also mention that I moved from my old place to where I am now. I am not wealthy. I've given thousands of hours out to many people who phone me, giving talks and helping them on. And at the moment, I'm going into a bad way, you might say, where I might be needing some people's help to get me through this year, what's left of this year, through winter, financially. And I'd be happy for anyone who has extra money to volunteer it, because I wouldn't ask this unless it was really necessary. But I see a bad time coming up for me here. And maybe some of those who I have helped for giving all these talks off air to, and I've always been here for them and given so much of my time for them, maybe they can find a way to help help me out now, because things aren't going so well. I'm also thinking of maybe of making a home video with some more talks, including slides and so on, because I'm trying to find new ways of bringing in money. What I was working at here is finished for the year. I also do cars outside once in a while when I get them, but there's not very many.
Car engines.
I fix them for people. And so, yeah, things are getting pretty bleak for me.
And you worked at the mill for a little bit when the man had some... But you're further out now than you were before when you moved, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Alan?
I'm further north.
Because I recall before you made the move, a lot of times when we talked, you were in the process of repairing sometimes tractor motors.
Yep.
Making parts for cars that they don't make anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed. That hasn't been happening as often since you've moved, and
you're
about 300 miles further north.
That's right, yeah. And plus, my spine is not in the best shape right now, so I won't be doing much for the next two or three months.
Maybe if our listeners will send their love and their light and...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there will be...
And also, they must remember that I pay for my own calls through the show.
Oh, every broadcast we do, you pay your way into me, I pay into the studio, yes.
So people must always think, and rather than just take for granted that everyone's surviving who are trying to do the right thing for others, it sometimes amazes me that very few will actually ask you how you're managing. They take it like a regular television show and take it for granted that you must be doing well. It never occurs to them to say, how are you surviving? You know? And I think they should remember that and keep that in their minds at all times, that there's nothing sold on this show. This is all listener-sponsored. Everything has to be paid for. I pay for the calls to Jackie, and I get nothing back for that. The people should be aware of what we are doing.
Well,
and it's not for ourselves.
Right.
So it would be helpful for them to help, you know, help out.
You know what I was thinking about earlier? You know, what you just shared with us, I had a talk with Steve Jacobson,
mm-hmm.
and he was saying pretty much the same thing, Alan,
yeah.
that it seems that... The tapes that he made, I mean, they are classics. Wake Up America,
mm-hmm.
and Mind Control, Medium Mind Control in America. But whatever, he's in about the same boat that you just expressed that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about this afternoon after talking with him, and I thought, you know, there are people on the air in this alternative radio thing,
mm-hmm.
and not all of them, but the ones that are really visible and, you know, are on 4 and 6 and hours a day, and some of them, you know, 30 hours a week, literally.
With rather large staffs, too.
Yeah, with very large staffs, and I thought, you know, these are all the... I'm not mentioning names, so I'm going to say this, but they're just either they're part of the program or they're in it for the money, but whatever, they're the ones that seem to be really doing well.
Albert Pike said, when the people need leaders, we shall supply them.
Leaders, yes.
And of course, a leader must come out with more information, be high-powered, have a big staff and backup support team that flashes all the information on their screen so they can read it off and sound like geniuses.
Well, there's one, I cannot say a name, but there is one individual that Linda Kennedy, and this is on her website, by the way, Walking by Faith, WBF Legal Reform. Actually, folks, you can get to Linda Kennedy's website from our main page. But anyway, there's one broadcaster team that when they reported their sales tax, they were in the $1.5 to $2 million category.
Yep.
This came right off their state's website, you know, that listed all of these. And probably those were only sales that weren't cash, because you don't have to, you know, report cash. And I thought about that, and I thought they seem to be the ones that really thrive financially, and people talk about them and support them, and those of us who are, and there are a few of us, it's not just me. Chris Gerner's one, Darren Weeks, Darren does a broadcast, Chris Gerner. There are others that I can't think of offhand, but they live very frugally. We all live very frugally. And the other ones out there just waller in it. And maybe, folks, those of you who appreciate the information that you get from this broadcast, and appreciate Alan for the time. As he said, those of you who have called him, he's given freely of his time. And, of course, so have I. That is not to, you know, belittle what I have done, but that if you have extra or there is some way that you can find to give a hand, reach out. I believe it's to everybody's benefit, Alan.
Well, it is, because I don't know how many thousands of calls I've had over since 98, and I've always been there to answer, and I made sure, you know, I could always hear the phone when I was working outside on vehicles or whatever, so I could always get in and answer, and I'd spend 2 or 3 hours with everybody. And over and over and over. So I've given off myself, and I will see if it works, if it comes back.
Well, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like this. It will determine whether we're just another entertainment form.
Sure.
Or that it's actually valuable. The information has been personally and impactfully important to the people.
Yeah, because it literally does mean if I'll be there, I'll be able to even stay here or just move on. And that's where I am right now.
And get a 9-to-5 job?
No. Well, to get a 9-to-5 job or whatever, but one way or another, I can't do both.
Right.
Full time. You either give up part of one or give it all up and do the other. Or try and continue helping the ones you can help, but I can't starve at the same time, and that's the bottom line. And I have bills to pay as well, you know, as we all do. So that's the hard facts of it all.
And I find out that the electrical and the energy bills are just as high in Canada.
They're higher, actually.
And the gas prices are higher.
Yeah, you're paying almost $1 a liter or $4 a gallon. So every time I pop into town to get photocopies made, I pack up, there's a good half tank of gas.
Of the books.
The postage is higher, and there's tax on top of the postage, which you don't see on the stamps. There's 15% on top of everything.
That they take from you?
Yeah, every envelope, every piece of paper has 15% tax on it, over the sale price. the postage has 15% sales tax added onto it too.
Oh my God.
So yeah, and that's coming, you know, once they merge
to America,
have, but they're merging the whole continent.
You know what? You know the thought that went into my mind before you said that?
Yeah.
It's coming to America.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. But as I say, we'll find out shortly if it's what's going to happen one way or another, and that's the bottom line. That's where I am.
In other words, you see, because the thought that I had is, you know, the people that know you have called you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about this, about the broadcast, would not care whether the broadcast went off or not because they could always call you. However,
no, I was simply won't be here.
Well, that's what
I'm
saying.
I won't have a phone because
however,
my bill is over $120 a month.
Right, that won't
for
be
the phone.
That won't be the case.
Yeah.
In other words, they won't hear you on the air, mm-hmm. and they won't be able to reach you.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And you give and give and give of your time, and when you're teaching people, and sometimes it takes a few years of a lot of teaching with every one of them, it does drain you. It takes a lot out of you,
yes,
because you have to tailor-make the teaching for the psychology of the individual. And so... it takes a lot out of me when I'm doing it. Yeah. I can talk on the shows, it's easy because I'm talking generally. But
yeah,
each individual, as I say, it takes a lot out. It's a lot of energy.
You know what just occurred to me?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our listeners probably just think, when you said it takes a lot out of you,
mm-hmm.
that, well, you're just infallible.
No, yeah, they might think so. But you have
and your
to
back
recharge,
goes,
and
your back
have,
goes out, and you get stuffy noses, and
yeah,
yes, I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
In other
yeah.
words, folks, Alan is human.
Yeah,
just like the rest of us.
That's right.
And not infallible. And I can, from all of the conversations that Alan and I have had off air as well as on, I'm clear that he lives very frugally. Usually, sometimes I've called him when he's cooking, and I ask him what he's making, and it's always a stew, like, you know, beans, and I say, well, you must be very slim then, if you eat beans all the time. So, in other words, Alan isn't saying something here tonight that I haven't, in a sense, experienced myself. I don't think that over these past, gosh, Alan, is it 8 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
7 years? 98.
Seven, yeah.
Well, I think you would have slipped one time or another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In all that time, if you were living a luxurious life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's basically where we are, and things are coming down fast, and we can either continue getting out to people, or else simply say it's time to withdraw ourselves. You know. And that's where I am, because if I can't keep going financially, I can't speak to anybody, you know. And I won't blame myself for it, because it's just the way it is. And I've done all I can do, you know.
Well, any time we've ever talked about phone calls that you've had,
mm-hmm.
which isn't often, but you've occasionally mentioned, mm-hmm. I want our listeners to know I have never heard a name, not once. In fact, one of our listeners that I know and that I talked to on the telephone went to visit Alan recently, and I had no idea he was even going to go. That's how closed-mouthed everything is, until he was there and I spoke to him on the phone. But, shoot, Alan, where was I going with this? I get myself so engrossed in what I'm saying
mm-hmm.
that sometimes I lose where I was coming from.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I know where I was coming from. The thought that occurred to me is that a couple of times you have told me that you've spoken, that some very wealthy people had called you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, and they heard you on the broadcast, and it occurred to me that if there are some of those that have gained, have benefited, and have a desire maybe to, or maybe just the goodness out of their heart, if there's that kind of money available that they might, because they've called you and talked to you,
yeah, mm-hmm,
and benefited from that, that maybe they will come forth.
As I say, you know, I've said all I had to say, so I'll just wait and see, you know. I'll wait and see, and the proof is in the answer. Yeah. Because there's no other way to continue at the moment, really, and that's how bad it's getting, or it is.
And it's getting that way for so many people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
$4 a gallon for gas.
Uh-huh.
It's the last time I filled up, which was a couple of days ago, I topped my tank off.
Yeah.
It was $2.45 a gallon for mid-grade.
Oh,
I know, but it blew me away, Alan.
Uh-huh.
I have a little 90 Beretta, 1990. Mm-hmm. That I can get 40 miles to the gallon on. I used to, till uh-huh, they started putting something in the gas. But I used to fill that tank, and it wasn't all so long ago,
yeah,
for $10.
Mm-hmm.
And it cost me, the last time I didn't even fill it up. I just stopped at $30.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but it was fairly, you know, high. I saw the needle. Well, then I topped it off the other day. It was $14.
Mm-hmm.
To put 5.7 gallons of gas in my car.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, I use a 1977 Ford truck. That's what I'm driving.
So you mentioned, you know, that the drive-in to get copies of the books made.
Yeah.
How far is the trip?
About 20 miles on the east side of the town. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just, that's, you know, both ways. It's 40 altogether.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, you spend a lot of money just making up those and time.
And you don't have the resources to have a bunch of them made at one time.
No.
So then you have to make a bunch of trips.
You have 100 copies and have all the envelopes and the stickers and the stamps, so I'd only have to go to a corner country post office and nail them. That's all I'd have to do then. Yeah.
Well, I can understand that, because I remember when we used to put out those document packets.
Yes.
Oh, Alan. Now, your book, your last book, I think, is about 75 pages.
85,
okay. And we sometimes did packets with 200 and 300 pages in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost to us for the drive, because it was an hour, you know, to go to the Staples,
mm-hmm,
and the cost of the paper and the mailing and et cetera, et cetera. And if we made $3 or $4 on those packets,
yeah,
but we wanted people to have them,
mm-hmm,
so we offered them at a price that we felt people could afford.
Yep.
But I finally just even quit offering them, Alan.
Yes, but it's not worth, I mean...
Well, it isn't that it is even worth it,
but... And you're not breaking even.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Between Chuck and I mean, it took both of us. And if you got them collated, it costs more. We
yeah,
tried that a couple of times, and they always screwed them up.
Uh-huh.
So we wound up having to collate them ourselves and get extra copies. And there's another drive to the Staples.
Yeah.
You know, people don't actually have an idea of
no,
what goes on behind the scenes.
No, even when you destroy your master copies, and that's happened to me already.
Yeah.
And have to do them all up again. And that was a weird experience in itself. As I say, I saw three people taken over for a space of 4 hours as this pantomime went on. And so, yeah, you do come under attack, and I certainly have been, you know. Yeah. And again, it's people who have never experienced that will find it hard to imagine, but it did happen. Yeah.
Well, there is a particular topic that I would like us to address, and I'm not even going to say it right now.
Uh-huh.
But would you come back with us tomorrow night?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, if the time comes that you're not going to be available to us, this mm-hmm. is something I hope we can go into depth about.
Sure, honey.
Okay, and I'll talk to you about it, but I just don't want to say it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're just about out of... Well, we've got about 4 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I would like to say. I had a call from a listener last night who was so frustrated with the caller that we had.
Yeah.
And folks, I have said this a long, long time ago, and 99.99% of you have always been so gracious. And if you've ever called in without me saying, well, the phone lines are open, you always had something relevant to ask or to say, to add. And that I've always appreciated. But so I'm saying this for the very few who aren't that considerate. I'm not going to accept calls. When somebody calls in and goes off on a tangent someplace that is totally out of the context of our conversation, it isn't a warning. It's to let you know beforehand, because I don't like to be ignorant, but I'm just going to hang the phone up. I'm not, because it disturbs our listeners when a conversation that's so important is ruptured like that, and we're not going to have it anymore. Okay, Alan?
Yeah, well, I agree with that, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, you know
what the topic is, and if this person wants us to talk about something that they want to talk about, I suggest you go back to and play on the Internet for a while.
Yeah, that's, mm-hmm. yes. And, you know, I was looking at my clock,
uh-huh.
and I thought this is the first time ever that we have been at the end of an hour and weren't totally engrossed in something that I couldn't stand to have to
yeah.
stop. And so this, thank you for being with us tonight and sharing with us
yeah.
tonight, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow night, and I hope that you will join us. Well, join us if you'd like. And think about what we talked about tonight. Okay? We'll see you tomorrow night. Good night, folks. God bless you. Thanks, Alan.
Yes, good night.
Good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to